The construction industry in Indiana has depended on Quality Supply and Tool, a local family-owned business, to deliver quality sales and service over the last 25 years. The employees make the difference, like sales expert Nick Worley.
What sets us apart is we only offer quality tools and supplies from quality manufacturers. We have a quality trained sales and service staff knowledgeable of the products we sell and offer. Quality. It's in our name.
On South Harding Street in Indy, plus Bloomington and Jeffersonville, Quality Supply and Tool thinks outside the box. Store.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
And we are inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. jQuery along with Mike Thompson. Eddie Garrison is the man putting everything together. He is the George Bignotti of tonight's show, putting everything together behind the scenes as it is May in Indianapolis. No better time of year in the Circle City than what right now we are in the middle of. And, of course, with Beyond the Bricks, we always take a look back at the stories, the heritage, the history, the personalities that make up the Indianapolis 500-mile race and make the Indianapolis Motor Speedway the greatest racing venue in the world. Mike, it is a Monday. Now, I know that you are a huge fan of the Breakfast with the Beatles, and that's my terrible British accent. Breakfast with the Beatles show means McCartney Monday. And we're not doing McCartney Monday necessarily today, but we are doing alliteration. It's Montage Monday, correct?
Well, you know, Jake, I love alliteration, so we have to do Montage Monday in place of McCartney Monday. I listen to the Breakfast with the Beatles all the time, and they're very kind, and they've played some songs for me in different records and things like that. But I wanted to do a little bit of play off of that, and what better way to do that than come up with our own version, which is Montage Monday.
Now, wait. Here's the one thing, because we've discussed this on Beyond the Bricks before, but they did not play "Da-na-na-na-na-na, you say it's your birthday." They didn't play that, right?
No, I specifically asked for them not to play that because I said it was kind of cliche, you know, and I like that song. I play it on my birthday, but I said, don't play that specific song for me. I wanted to hear You Know My Name, Look Up the Number, and I wanted to hear Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. Those are two of my most favorite esoteric, you know, Beatles songs.
Okay.
That they don't get enough play.
I want to know the song as a Beatles aficionado that you are. I would like to know the song that when someone says they're a fan of the Beatles, you know they're a poser when they say this is their favorite Beatles song.
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. If they say that's their favorite song?
For example, you know, the running gag has always been with the band Radiohead. When someone says like, oh, Radiohead, I love them. Creep? And it's like, yeah, that's the one song that went mainstream.
Everybody knows.
From them.
Yeah, so, you could at least say Karma Police or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah,
so is there a Beatles song that tips the cap
that,
or, you know, like lets the, behind the curtain that somebody's a poser?
I'd say Twist and Shout just because, you know, it was in Ferris Bueller and things like that.
Fair.
That might be more of a kind of a poser thing. But,
you know,
but yeah.
Just so you know, before we get into the program, Eddie Garrison, who, of course, also is the producer of Quarry & Company, shameless plug, from noon to three on this radio station. Eddie, until working with me, had never heard the song Hey Jude, Mike.
That is unbelievable. Unbelievable to me.
Now that
I
feel old, I'd like to play for you some old radio clips, right?
Now, what's funny is, you know, you asked me about Seinfeld the other day, and I keep getting all kinds of messages from people who are like, I can't believe you haven't seen Seinfeld. I'm like, I saw one episode, and I think it was the Kramer character who was making jokes about the Wiz. Nobody beats the Wiz. I'm the Wiz, or something like that. I think, and that stuck in my head, and I've literally have never seen another episode, but I keep getting people sending me messages because you outed me as somebody who's never seen Seinfeld before.
Here's the thing. Seinfeld works in the opposite order of the Andy Griffith Show. And what I mean by that is Seinfeld got better as the seasons went along and it really hit its rhythm at about season three. Whereas Andy Griffith, once they hit like the last three seasons, it's time to basically start tapering off. Seinfeld, pick it up around season three. You'll love it. Watch the rest of it. You'll love it. You'll absolutely love it. All right, let's get to the topic for tonight, Montage Monday. And explain to me, if you will, Mike, exactly what it is that we're hearing. For example, I believe we're going to hear a montage of things that took place say, in the first half of the 20th century, if you will.
Yeah, so what happened was when WIBC did a show that preceded the show I produced a show called Heroes of the 500, but they did a show before that called History of the 500. And Scott Johnston, who I know you know, he's amazing. He's been there forever doing all kinds of great work at the station. He put together these kind of montage clips and things like that for use in History of the 500. What I've done over the years is I don't want to say enhanced is probably not the right word. I've added to the montages as we go over the years. And then I just, you know, finding little clips, and I want to drop this in and drop this in. And so making them longer and adding more things to them. So it's a little kind of a combination effort between the two of us. So the first one we're going to hear, though, is covers from the beginning of the, you know, Indianapolis 500 until 1946.
Mr. Haroon, how long was the race in which you won in 1911?
Well, it was about 6 hours and some odd minutes.
These days, we can pretty well cross the country and back in that time, can't we?
That's right.
Hard to forget the one I did not finish in 1912, because everyone likes to talk about it.
That's right.
Everyone reads about it. There have been more lines written about the race that I did not win than there did on the one that I did win in 1915.
High compression engines, four-wheel brakes, front-wheel drive, straight-eight engine, multiple carburetor, even the rear vision mirror.
I go down the back stretch singing, oh boy, I'm lucky, I'll say I'm lucky. Every time I cross a line, all alone, $100, $100, $100.
We played baseball for an hour and a half to 2 hours every day in the infield by the garages.
Back in 1930, he won $52,100.
When a driver doesn't make it to the starting line and gets paid as much money as I had got in three wins, then you're born 50 years too soon.
If I hadn't have bought it, it would have been subdivided, and Indiana and Indianapolis would have lost the one big thing they've got that's known around the world.
Heads up!
Very happy to have won the race. I enjoyed the ride very much.
Will Bishaw still leads, but can he hold the pace? Both man and car have suffered in this inferno of punishment. Close behind is Jimmy Snyder, and behind him a dozen more, grimly chasing the leaders round and round. Two more laps. One more lap, and still Shaw clings to that slim lead. The giant stands are in an uproar, screaming encouragement to Shaw and to Snyder. At last, here comes Wilbur Shaw on his final sprint. There goes the flag. Wilbur Shaw wins.
Suddenly there's a skid, and Floyd Roberts smashes in the box and watches his car, sending it ablaze. Chet Miller crashes through the infield fence and turns turtle. A triple cracker. Miller is pinned beneath his car. Swanson is thrown clear, and Roberts, mortally hurt, has driven his last race. As flames complete their work of destruction, the mad race goes on before the crowd of 145,000. Wilbur Shaw roars home a winner, but 115 miles an hour is too hot for comfort.
Once more, the checkered flag starts the annual Memorial Day test of men and machinery. This is the 29th running of the Indianapolis Speedway race of devil drivers. 500 rubber and steel scorching miles over a glazed brick track with death lurking at every turn. There goes Wilbur Shaw, out to become the only man ever to win four Indianapolis races. But there are 30 other lead-footed daredevils after the $30,000 first prize. Shaw is forced out after 380 cylinder braking miles, and on they go. Into the lead roars car number 16, co-piloted by Maury Rose. He gets the payoff flag, and into the winner's pit he goes to share the fame and fortune that falls to the winner.
A lot of good stuff in there, Mike. I think one of the things that makes it fun is hearing some of the old audio clips of the names that we have talked about over the course of the last 5 years in doing this show.
I agree. One of the things that's really cool about that particular montage is you hear Fred Frame's voice in there, which that's a guy we don't get to hear very often from Fred Frame. And also, I think that the newsreels of the time are really interesting because they play up the danger aspect and, you know, death is at every turn and corner and things like that. So it really is an interesting time capsule of the 500 at that time.
Fred Frame, by the way, when it comes to the history of the Speedway and radio about the Indianapolis 500, in particular the precursor to this show with Talk of Gasoline Alley, Fred Frame is the answer to one of the favorite trivia questions of both Mike and myself, and that is, who was the first Indianapolis 500 driver that Donald Davidson was asked to discuss on the IMS radio network? And the answer to that is Fred Frame. Fred Frame was obviously not racing at the time, but that's who Donald was asked about. In 1946, of course, coming off of the war, as we've talked about, there was a change in ownership at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Tony Holman would become the owner, and the second montage starts with the beginning of that Holman era from 1946 to 1959.
The minute that those words are said, I know that nothing in the world can stop the race.
It is tremendous. This is a mutual broadcasting system. Into the home stretch. Now coming down the stretch, and they have the checkered flag out. That's the flag that's only been dipped 30 times. This will be the 30th time in the history of this great classic. Here comes Robeson down the home stretch now. Everybody is standing up. It's a very tense throng, and there is the checkered flag. He's crossing the finish line, and Georgie Robeson is the winner.
Checkered flag's waving, and Mario Rose is the winner.
This treacherous northeast turn has claimed another car, Duke Naylor.
Down and across the finish line, and Bill Holland is the winner.
Boy, am I happy. The winner's gold.
Here's the checkered flag for Troy Rutman.
Now stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
You know, that phrase came out of a meeting Bill Dean and I had. We were trying to think of a cutaway cue.
He's been gone about a minute. He should be coming down the straightaway. Here he comes, getting the checkered flag.
And Bill Vukovich evidently going to the outside to miss the trouble, went over the wall, and that car is still burning over there.
Bill Vukovich, three-time winner of the 500-mile race, almost, trying for his third consecutive today, trapped in his car in the backstretch, was injured fatally. Bill Vukovich has died as a result of injuries suffered on the backstretch in the accident reported to you earlier on this broadcast.
You can hear the cheers in the home stretch, and here's Sid Collins. Pick him up.
We can't see him yet, but here he comes down. I'm sure that beautiful pink car, the checkered flag is out. Bill Vandewater, the starter, holds it high, waves it, and there's Bob Swaker, the winner of the first-time annual 500-mile race.
Well, it's certainly a great thrill to see Sammy Hanks take the checkered flag, and there he is, the winner of the 500. What a great champion he's going to be. And here he comes around the southwest turn again for his extra lap. Sam Hanks winning the race by approximately 20 seconds.
It's Rathman, Alesian, Reese, Parsons, and O'Connor now to Lou Palmer in the northeast turn.
And we've got an accident here. Car number five, the Zinc Special, is the first direct, another over the wall. And we've got one, two, three, four, five, six cars piled up here on the northeast turn. The 54 Novi into the infield. Car number 19 in the infield. 68 now down into the infield. And it's almost impossible to identify the others.
Let's go back to Luke Walton in the center pit. He has A.J. Foyt standing by.
Yes, Sid, here's the young man in his first race. He's from Houston, Texas. A.J. Foyt Jr. And A.J., what's the A stand for?
Anthony.
Jim, it's a thrill for us as always to see a winner. And there's the checkered flag for Jimmy Bryan, champion of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And you can hear the crowd here, a throng of over 180,000 souls.
Bill Vandewater has the checkered flag out. He waves it now for Roger Ward as he comes by the finish line to become the 1959 conqueror of the 500-mile race.
That montage from 1946 to 1959 and presenting a few of the names that would become ubiquitous within the next few decades in the Indianapolis 500-mile race. One of those decades, of course, the 1960s, and that is the subject of tonight's third montage on Montage Monday.
Still, Ward, then Rathman.
It's Rathman ahead of Ward by a fair margin. Looks like about 65 feet right now.
What happened to Ward?
Out again.
Now coming here for a pit stop is Eddie Sachs.
A.J. Foyt takes the lead from Eddie Sachs in the south third. A.J. Foyt, winner of the Golden Anniversary 500 miles.
I figured first place was all over with.
Coming down the main stretch now is Roger Ward, the winner.
And there's the checkered flag for Parnelli Jones.
The only thing I can say is I love everybody.
There has been a spectacular crash. There's so much fire and so much smoke.
Eddie Sachs was fatally injured in the accident on the main straightaway.
No one is moving on the racetrack.
Well, they say that Green and Peanuts are unlucky. I don't think he's eaten any peanuts, but he does have a green car, and boy, he is He's coming into your view, and here he is.
And here he comes, and here is the checkered flag for Jimmy Clark of Doane, Scotland, winner of the 1965 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
That man waves the flag, and the golden anniversary 500-mile race is on. The number one turn at Mike Ahern.
And here they come to the number one turn, accelerating out of the back and taking the lead.
We have an accident on the main stretch, Mike. Hold it. We have a terrible accident on the main stretch. A very bad accident on the main stretch before they reach the turn. Lou Palmer is closest to them. We can't count how many cars are
out of the race. Number 39, also out. Number 96, parked against the wall. All drivers seem to be getting out of the equipment that's parked immediately in front of us here.
Here he comes down the main stretch, and there's a checkered flag for Graham Hill, winner of the Golden Anniversary Indianapolis 500-mile race.
As said, I must report, Parnelli Jones is almost at a halt on turn number four. He went by me clear under the white line, almost into the grass, and he's barely coasting around. Parnelli Jones in some kind of problem. Back to you, Sid.
And there's an accident on the front straightaway. Two, three, four cars. Where's Point? I don't know whether he can get through or not.
Came along the track apron and just stopped just short of the infield grass. He's still in there. I don't know if they're going to try to push that car out or not. We've got the glasses fixed on him. Now they are pushing it. Now they're pushing it back into the infield grass. I think Joe Leonard's out of this race.
The checkered flag for Bobby Unser.
Can't believe I'm here.
And here's the checkered flag. Pat Vidan holds it and waves it for Mario Andretti, winner of the 1969 500-mile race.
Two things that really jump out, I think, Mike, in that era. The 1960s, I think it's safe to say, is the era that began to catapult many of the participants in the Indianapolis 500 into national and international stardom. Now, that's not to say they didn't have a lot of clout coming in, but you could almost hear within the progress of that montage the escalation of impact of the race itself. And in addition to that, it was a reminder of the confluence of both danger and triumph that took place in particular in that era with the different cars and many of the big names that were involved.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how much I think, Sid had and the radio network had so much to do with, you know, improving the stature and raising the stature of the event. But you're right. I mean, you know, the danger aspect was always there. And the fact that, we lost so many talented people over the years. It's such a shame and so sad that we had to lose all these, fine people and fine stars over the years. It's just it's difficult to go back sometimes. You know, you play the clips over and over, and sometimes you get desensitized to it. But then you hear, the Eddie Sachs eulogy, and it kind of stops you in your tracks at some point.
When we come back, grab your polyester, a pull tab can, maybe some tough skin jeans if you were a little kid, disco ball, whatever it might be. Because we'll move on to the 70s, the montages thereof, on this Montage Monday on Beyond the Bricks.
In the construction business and can't find what you need, Quality Supply and Tool has served Hoosiers for over a quarter of a century. Tom Hawk is the branch manager of the Indy location on South Harding Street.
We've always been big on keeping our shelves fully stocked of inventory of industrial grade tools, concrete, masonry products, as well as the necessary accessories to help get the job done. You don't have it, you can't sell it. Our experience allows us to help with getting the pros as well as the weekend pro taken care of.
Quality Supply and Tool also has locations in Bloomington and Jeffersonville to help you think outside the box store.
Hey all, I'm Jamie Lynn Sigler, a mom, actor, and advocate. I know how overwhelming it can be trying to decide which treatment is right for you. I've been there, but you should know you're not alone. You can do this. Start with some research, talk to the community, and most importantly, don't be afraid to ask your doctor questions. You might find results that speak for themselves. That's how I landed on Kesimpta. Ask your doctor if Kesimpta, ofatumumab, could be right for you. You can check out the details at kesimpta.com.
Beyond the Bricks on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
It's the flavor sensation of the 60s. Yes, it's Stark and Wetzel Luncheon Meats, preferred for delicatessen freshness, flavor, and wonderful variety. Whether you choose these good-eating favorites for party treats or for family meals, you get the four-fold assurance of quality that only Stark and Wetzel can give you. First of all, Stark and Wetzel Luncheon Meats are made from the finest, lean, government-inspected meats, wholesome and protein-rich. Secondly, every delicious Stark and Wetzel Luncheon Meat, from tangy pickle loaf to hearty old-fashioned loaf, is carefully tested and controlled for highest quality, freshness, purity, and flavor. Third, all Stark and Wetzel Luncheon Meats carry a written money-back guarantee of satisfaction on the package. And fourth, these good meat favorites have earned the famous Good Housekeeping Seal. Remember, for delicatessen freshness, variety, and top quality, you always get the best of it with Stark and Wetzel Luncheon Meats.
By the way, we talk a lot about Stark and Wetzel on this program. A little bit of history there. That was an Indianapolis-based company, obviously, as you heard Sid Collins mention there, specializing in lunch meats. It was founded in 1936 by George Stark and Irwin Wetzel, who had worked together at the King & Company and decided to go into their own business venture. And by 1952, they sponsored the Rookie of the Year Award for the Indianapolis 500, a $500 award, by the way, back in those days. But of course, Stark and Wetzel was doing nearly $50 million in business by the late 50s per year. And then in 1972, the name of the company was changed to Stark and Wetzel Foods, which ultimately would be sold in 1974. They closed their Indianapolis location. They were purchased by a company out of Iowa in 1981. And then by 1985, ceased operations. But that's why you hear so often on Beyond the Bricks the advertisements, the whistling jingle of Stark and Wetzel, because it was a massive. And of course, when you think about the Indianapolis 500, you think about like lunch meats and packing your lunch and those things. Natural tie-in when it comes to the 50s, 60s, and our topic now on Montage Monday, the decade of the 70s. And Mike, when you think about the glory years of the Indianapolis 500, I think for the two of us, there's probably a little bit of recency or age bias, because the 70s was the first time that you and I were introduced to the 500, so to speak. But even with that said, I think when you think about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and it being all of a sudden thrust into the main limelight of the American culture, the 70s are the decade that were as responsible for that as much as any other.
Oh, I agree. I mean, the fact that television is beginning to really explode, the tape delay era really helped that when they started the tape delay era on ABC in 1971. And of course, there are so many larger than life personalities, you know, the Unser brothers, you know, A.J. Foyt, Gordon Johncock, Johnny Rutherford, you know, so many drivers of huge, huge talent are all racing against each other at the same time.
So without further ado on Montage Monday, our montage of the 1970s.
Al Unser, the winner of the 1970 Indianapolis 500.
Al Unser, winner of the 1971 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Johnny Lightning Carr is still the quickest so far.
Checkered flag for Mark Donahue.
Oh, lots of Kalk, Einhopper, and Roger Penske.
Rutherford down low, but Bobby, there's a terrible crash on the home stretch. There are several cars and cars. We can't see the numbers, but it's been a bad crash on the car.
You may have.
We have a crash on the fourth turn. Jim, can you see it? The yellow is out. Jim Shelton.
It was a violent crash with much flame, but it's way down the track from me, Sid. I cannot see really who it is.
The red flag is out, and the race is being stopped. The red flag is out, and the race is being stopped.
Well, this has been one of the most disastrous months of May all the way around.
Gordon Johncock still holding on to first place.
The yellow flag is out. Perhaps just slowing down for race.
I really hate to see a race end this way. I would surely like to win the 500 miles.
And here's the checkered flag for Johnny Rutherford.
Here comes the rain.
Bobby Unser may have weathered the storm.
Johnny Rutherford doesn't care which lap he leads as long as it's the last one. Lap number 102.
We're here at the crossroads of America. Goodbye.
May 2nd, Sid Collins passed away.
This broadcast crew deeply feels the loss of our leader, Sid Collins.
In company with the first lady ever, gentlemen, start your engine.
AJ Foyt has won his fourth 500-mile race.
Al Unser.
Windsor, the winner of the 1978 500-mile race.
Frank Mears, the winner of the 63rd 500-mile race.
That's how it sounded in the 1970s. A couple of things that jump out at that, Mike. Number one, it's interesting to hear that clip because I think anybody who has followed along with or knows the years of the Indy 500 knows that when you hear Sid Collins talking about what a disastrous month it has been all the way around, you're pretty certain that he's talking about 1973.
Absolutely. And that's one of the clips that I actually added to the montage because I think it's very important. I mean, Sid was such a consummate professional, but the events of 1973 when they had the Swede Savage accident and then the terrible accident in the pits right in front of them when Armando Taran was killed, the crew member, Sid is basically, he's had enough. He's fed up with it. He's ready to walk out the door. You can tell because he's just frustrated with the goings on, all the rain delays and the accidents. And it's just, you can tell that the air is definitely out of the balloon for Sid. And he expresses a little bit of frustration when they have to throw to another delay, and he's basically finished with it. So I think that's an important clip.
Interesting decade because obviously you had the handing of the torch, if you will, with the passing of Sid Collins over to Paul Page. We have covered that. You have the emergence, even though he was already a megastar in the 60s, the cement of legacy for AJ Foyt in the 70s. And the rise in those names, you heard Johnny Rutherford, Gordon Johncock. Yes, they had been around in the previous decade, but it was the 70s where they would really be cemented and finalized as legends within the sport. And now to the decade that is the one that brought Mike and I to the Speedway. I don't mean that to say that the Speedway benefited from that, but it was the first time that you and I had attended the Indianapolis 500. My first year there was in 1981. A year later, Mike, you would attend the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the very first time. So without further ado, grab your parachute pants and perhaps your thriller jacket because we're going to montage through the 1980s.
Johnny Rutherford wins the 1980 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
There is apparently a fire burning around the bottom of Rick Mears' car.
Bobby Unser has won the Indianapolis 500.
Look at that. He's passed about half a dozen cars.
Oh, James, that's...
Under the yellow, you can't do that.
That is a no-no.
Just 6 seconds.
Mears, 1.5 seconds behind Johncock. The white flag, they're side by side. Mears makes a try. Johncock wins it.
I don't know what to say. I'm just too tired.
I have no complaints. We tried to catch him. We just ran out of time.
And Tom Sneva has won the Indianapolis 500.
They're twin checkered flags waiting for Rick Mears.
Side by side, Sullivan has the lead. Danny Sullivan.
Just holding on.
I'm kind of busy right now, Sam. I'll talk to you afterwards.
Rahal comes past Kevin Cogan, and Bobby Rahal has won his first Indianapolis 500.
Mario Andretti slows down.
Roberto Guerrero is in. He stalls the engine.
The flags come out for our second four-time winner, Al Unser.
It's something that a guy can dream about, and it never comes true, but this time it did.
In 1988, Rick Mears is going to win.
Here comes Al Unser Jr. on the inside. He's got it!
He's got it.
They're side by side.
Racing, I guess.
Lou Palmer with the famous That's Racing, I Guess. Other voices that you heard there, obviously Larry Henry, Bob Jenkins, Paul Page, Jerry Baker was on the radio network at that time. Not sure if he was in that specific montage. But, Mike, what jumps out at me about the 80s when you look back on it? Obviously some fabulous finishes. But what's interesting is, and this is, I'm not saying this isn't the case with other decades as well, But in the 80s, some of the most iconic moments were not moments that had to do with necessarily the finishes, but rather controversies that took place. You heard the 81 Bobby Unser Mario Andretti incident, the 82 crash with Kevin Kogan at the beginning of the race, Kogan on the radio late in the race in 86 in terms of, you know, hey, I'm kind of busy here, and then obviously Bobby Rahal gets past him. And then, of course, the incident with Al Unser Jr., Emerson Fittipaldi. That's some fabulous audio reliving all of the drama of the 80s.
Yeah, all that stuff, a lot of that stuff actually is stuff I added because it's so important. I mean, the famous Coogan thing, I mean, I think it's somewhat unfair the way, as I've said several times, how Kevin Kogan has been treated over the years. But, I mean, that's a lore that, I mean, it's part of the race. And as you said, the 86 situation where Sam Posey's trying to talk to Kevin Kogan, you know, Sam, I'm a little busy right now, sorry, you know. So those are just so much part of the fabric of what we've done over the years. And it's really important to fans, so I wanted to add those things to the montages.
Speaking of fabric, we're actually going to change from parachute pants and zipper pants into actual jeans. Bugle Boys, perhaps. Maybe Guess. Guess was probably the 80s as well. Lucky Jeans, perhaps? The 1990s.
Ari Leyendyke wins the Indianapolis 500. Rick Mears, the third four-time winner.
I never dreamed of even running here, let alone winning one, and let alone four.
The Windchill 39.
The pole car, Roberto Guerrero, has spun off the track.
And a crash.
They've got a crash again.
Another crash. I have never seen anything like this.
Michael Andretti, the leader, is slowing down.
Goodyear makes a move. Little Al wins by just a few tenths of a second. Perhaps the closest finish in the history of the Indianapolis 500.
There's a lot of, sounds like there's some tears in your voice right now.
Well, you just don't know what Indy means.
Emerson Fittipaldi, the final turn for home, the checker flag, and Emerson Fittipaldi has won his second Indianapolis 500.
Emerson, you're not going to drink the milk.
Well, I'm going to drink the orange juice. That's my producing, and I'm going to have this time orange juice.
Emerson Fittipaldi has hit the wall.
Al Unser Jr. has won the 78th.
Goodyear went around the pace car.
Scott Goodyear will get the black flag. The checkered flag is waving, and Jacques Villeneuve wins the 1995 Indianapolis 500.
All the rumors, political haggling, and insults are forgotten right now.
The 1996 Indianapolis 500 is won by Buddy Lazier.
His back looked like a hard-boiled egg smashed on the ground.
This race is going to end under the caution flag.
And the green flag is being waved. The race is on. Ari Leyendyke wins the 1997 in his ninth start. Eddie Cheever wins.
Gordon's pulling in.
Kenny Breck has got it.
Kenny Breck wins the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And who will be there to greet him? A.J. Foyt.
It's just unbelievable.
Mike King would, of course, be the anchor of the IMS Radio Network at the end of that montage. Bob Jenkins there as well. And, Mike, we should probably give salute as well to Jack Arute, because Jack Arute was such an important part of the broadcast aspect of the Indianapolis 500 in the 80s and 90s. And he got the soundbite that I think most defines Indianapolis, and that is the famous Al Unser Jr. quote of, "You just don't know what Indy means."
Absolutely. I mean, Jack Arute was a mainstay, and that and the Emerson Fittipaldi interview the next year, I had to add those to the montage because I thought about that, and I'm like, you think of the 1990s, those are the first two things that I think of from a soundbite standpoint. So I had to add those to the montage. But you're right. I mean, Jack Arute, very important to the history of broadcasting at the Speedway.
And certainly, when it comes to the orange juice controversy with Emerson Fittipaldi, it is fair to point out, because that was a huge deal, obviously, at the time, and understandably so, Mike, but it is fair to point out in defense of Emerson Fittipaldi that he is somebody that, who, by the way, and I have very limited interactions with him, but when I have interacted with Emerson Fittipaldi in his post-racing career, he could not have been more gracious, truth be told, and I think once the dust settled on that, he did then realize the magnitude of his denying the milk and drinking the orange juice and was contrite about it.
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, I think once he realized what a big deal it was, I think he felt bad about it. And he's always been an incredible gentleman to be around. But he also, I think he gets a massive bad rap for that because, I mean, he's not the first person who refused to milk in Victory Lane. Bobby Unser refused it. And Bobby Unser, nobody holds that against Bobby Unser at all because it didn't happen on live television. So I think Emerson gets a bad rap for what happened. I mean, it was a mistake. He shouldn't have done that probably. But unfortunately, it's just one of those things that has just hung around the neck of Emerson ever since.
When we come back into a new century and into a new montage on this Montage Monday of Beyond the Bricks.
In the construction business and can't find what you need, Quality Supply and Tool has served Hoosiers for over a quarter of a century. Tom Hawk is the branch manager of the Indy location on South Harding Street.
We've always been big on keeping our shelves fully stocked of inventory of industrial grade tools, concrete, masonry products, as well as the necessary accessories to help get the job done. You don't have it, you can't sell it. Our experience allows us to help with getting the pros as well as the weekend pro taken care of.
Quality Supply and Tool also has locations in Bloomington and Jeffersonville to help you think outside the box. Store.
Hey all, I'm Jamie Lynn Sigler, a mom, actor, and advocate. I know how overwhelming it can be trying to decide which treatment is right for you. I've been there. But you should know you're not alone. You can do this. Start with some research, talk to the community, and most importantly, don't be afraid to ask your doctor questions. You might find results that speak for themselves. That's how I landed on Kesimpta. Ask your doctor if Kesimpta, ofatumumab, could be right for you. You can check out the details at kesimpta.com.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
He makes it look like child's play. But to him, driving the Domino's Pizza Hot One is no game. Watch for Domino's Pizza Team Shearson and co-sponsors Mobile One and Coca-Cola in the IndyCar World Series. Keep your eye on a winner. Domino's Pizza delivers. Al Unser Jr., a winner picks a winner every time.
Unser Jr. and the Domino's Pizza Hot One. Of course, that is the car that Ari Leyendijk would pilot to Victory Lane in 1990. On this Montage Monday here, Jake Query along with Mike Thompson inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. Eddie Garrison putting everything together for us tonight on Beyond the Bricks. And interesting, Mike, as we now transition in our montages from the 90s into the early 2000s, reality is this also was a transitional era for not only the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but also the sport of open wheel racing, clearly because of coming off of the split between the Indy Racing League and Championship Auto Racing teams and everything happening with that, and then the coming back together of it as well in the first decade of the 2000s.
Yeah, a different time for sure. I mean, even as we heard in the 1990s clip, we had Bob Jenkins alluding to the fact of the politics and the things that were going on with the two different races in 1996 and the utter disaster that that whole situation was. And then, as you said, you're splitting apart and then coming back together. I mean, there were a lot of things involved, a lot of drivers that we would have liked to have seen who didn't get a chance to drive in the 500 because of it, and missed opportunities for some of the drivers who did, you know, people like Al Unser Jr., Michael Andretti. I mean, they missed a number of years that they would have had other opportunities to win the race.
Here's how it sounded in montage form. The first decade, the first decade of the new century, 2000 to 2010.
Juan Montoya wins the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Elio Castroneves leads the final 51 laps and wins.
Elio Castroneves climbs the fence in the front straight.
Cracks back in two.
Paul Tracy has made the pass.
The pass will not stick.
Two in a row for Elio. Well,
I think it's me that won. I mean, I know I was ahead of him.
Jonah Farron winning the 87th Indianapolis 500-mile race.
We do see some raindrops falling.
Buddy Rice from Phoenix, Arizona wins.
David Letterman watches. Congratulations.
What am I doing here?
Danica Patrick going side by side with Weldon. She'll be the leader in turn number one.
Oh, my goodness.
Weldon will try to take the lead into one.
And he will get the job done.
Dan Weldon winning the 89th Indy 500.
Here goes Marco Andretti side by side. He's going to make the pass. Sam Horton Jr. makes the pass. He'll win it.
There goes, I guess, the Andretti luck, because second's nothing here.
Dario Franchitti will be the winner.
Scott Dixon from New Zealand drives Target Chip Ganassi Racing into victory lane.
Open the door to the three-time winner's club. There's a brand new member, and his name is Elio Castroneves.
He wants to go to the fence, and he will.
Dario Franchitti is a two-time winner of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Couple of things of note there in that decade, as you heard it. Mike King, of course, calling all of those finishes. Chris Denary, Mark Janes. I think we might have heard a little Paul Page in there at one point. Obviously, David Letterman getting a win with the Buddy Rice car. So a decade that had a lot of rain throughout the course of the decade, it would seem. And in addition, Dario Franchitti becoming accustomed to something, Mike, and that is winning the Indianapolis 500 under a caution flag.
That's correct. I mean, Dario won three Indianapolis 500s. All three of them are under the caution flag. And his good friend Dan Weldon won two, and both of them were under the caution flag. So they had five wins between the two of them, and none of them were underneath the green flag.
Now, in terms of the next montage, we are now up to 2010. We are obviously in the year 2025. That 14-year gap, no montage put together just yet. But, Mike, you say that you have something that you have put together here in lieu of an actual race broadcast montage, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So this is something pretty special, that this is more of a tribute to all of the voices, the people like yourself, Jake, and I'm not just saying that because you're doing the show with me, people like yourself, Nick Yeoman, Mark Janes, you know, Michael Young, people on the radio broadcast. But these are the people, the pioneers, the folks that, you know, these are the voices of May, the way I see it, you know, the people that have given us so much over the years. I'm talking about, you know, the chief announcers for the Indianapolis 500, people like Donald as well, people like, you know, going back to the Mutual era, people like Tom Carnegie. You know, I like to, you know, think of this next montage as just kind of, you know, the sounds of May, if you will. And so this one's a really special one to me, because obviously I love the broadcast history and Jim McKay and all those guys as well. So, you know, this one's a special one to me because the radio network and the television coverage are so special to me. And I wanted to do something, you know, special for that.
Okay, I've not heard it, but as Mike put it together, the media montage of the Indy 500.
Because of the special broadcast that follows, Against the Storm, sponsored by the makers of Philip Morris cigarettes, will be heard 1/2 hour from now over many of these stations. We acknowledge the courtesy of the sponsors in making this move, and we take you now to the Indianapolis Speedway.
This is Sid Collins saying welcome to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
I'm Paul Page, the voice of the 500, and we're proud to have you with us once again.
From high above the start-finish line, I'm Lou Palmer.
This is Bob Jenkins back in the Master Control Tower.
Mike King and the entire Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network crew back with you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. No matter where in the world you might be, we, of course, are at the corner of 16th and Georgetown.
He's making a move now. John on the Indianapolis 500.
200 turns, 500 miles of straightaways and banks, 300,000 screaming fans.
From here, I can see the entire main straightaway.
Bright blue and gold, canary yellow, orange, beautiful. White, blue, and red.
The world-class Brickyard Crossing golf course, the infield, loaded with canopies, blankets, grills, coolers, and, of course, the world's greatest race fan.
Unequaled at any other sporting event. Great drivers with beautiful, expensive cars.
The BorgWarner Trophy, proudly displayed. Victory Lane has been assembled.
John Goodyear closes in. But no! Al Unser Jr., the winner.
And he...
WIBC
Radio Indiana, WIBC Indianapolis.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Talk of Gasoline Alley on 1070 The Fan. We'll be here for the next 2 hours, entertaining your questions of a nostalgic nature about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the 500-mile race.
Now stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Now stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Now stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Now stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Off turn four for the final time. Elio Castroneves comes to the start-finish line. Twin checkers out.
Joins the four-time winners club. He wins the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500.
cool stuff to hear all of those voices and, of course, all of the chief announcers as well. And to repeat who those would be, Sid Collins, the original, then followed by Paul Page, Lou Palmer, Bob Jenkins, Mike King, Mark Janes now as well as the chief announcers of the IMS Radio Network. A lot of fun tonight, Mike, to listen back to all of the different audio clips over the course of over 100 years of fabulous memories at Indianapolis.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good time tonight, and I hope everybody enjoyed reliving a lot of fun memories.
And you know, the other fun thing about after the race is you get to get up in the morning and listen to the Beatles Monday, right?
I don't think they'll be having a show on Monday on Memorial Day, but that's hopefully probably they true. Will be.
But we do thank all of you for listening to Beyond the Bricks.
Spring is here, the perfect season to give your aging roof the attention it deserves. Florida's highest rated roofer is here to help. Experience the Janie difference and save up to $2,000 this season. Join a community of thousands of happy homeowners.
To go ahead and do it right the first time so that you don't have to hire another company to fix what the company should have done right. And I feel like that's Janie Roofing.
Get started at JanieRoofing.com.
Offer only applies on full roof replacement and expires May 31st, 2025.